I'm Brendan, I'm an addict.
Hello, Brendan.
Can you hear me? It feels all echoey. Thank you for helping me with the maths and helping me switch my phone off. I've never been to this meeting. Did I say I'm Brendan, I'm an addict?
Yeah.
Just breathe. I've never been to this meeting before and I don't know, I just feel really nervous, but there's some... Thank you for the, you know who you are, that are here with me. And my sponsor's sitting out there, which is lovely. I was thinking of when we first met in recovery and the kids were little and chaotic and I can only speak for myself, I was very chaotic. And what a blessing that we're both still here. And we've both got one child each in recovery. That's amazing. Whew. Yeah, welcome to anyone who's, if there's anyone who's new or back from a relapse. What to say? Basically, the NA works, really. I mean, all I think anybody needs to know is that we've got the disease of addiction. That it's a physical, mental, spiritual and emotional disease. I used to think that was a cop-out, a disease, for fuck's sake. But I think, well, dis-ease within myself, my sponsor used to say, and I could understand that, and that the answer's here. You know, the therapeutic value of one addict's helping another, and the 12-step, you know, the 12 steps that we do, that what we do here works. I've come out all hot and And breathe. It's all right. I don't know why I feel so nervous. I've done a lot of chairs over the years and, you know, it was strange. I've been to work and in Greenford and then I've come over here and then I've got to shoot off and get my grandkids for a sleepover, which seemed a really good idea at the time. And it's a far cry from where my life was before recovery. And I was reminded of that. I walked from Tottenham Court Road Station and what I realised was that the darkest part of my using was actually around Piccadilly, Shaftesbury Avenue and Covent Garden. I can see someone nodding, it makes me feel better. I didn't grow up around open addiction. My mum had a prescription addiction going and an eating disorder. And I grew up, I was an only child in a controlled, everything was really fucking controlled. And I started using when I was about 14. And I didn't have very long of social fun using. And then I came to London. I was meant to be going to college and I moved to Lewisham and I couldn't score at one point and I came up to Piccadilly to score and I bought someone else's money with me. And I was really naive. I thought I knew it all, but I hadn't got a fucking clue. And I got ripped off and I had no money left and it just seemed very logical, but I just thought, well, I can't go back without his money, so I just didn't go back and I ended up street homeless sort of not far from here. And funny enough, I remember being at Centrepoint, the shelter, and you could get three consecutive nights and I thought, what am I going to do on the fourth night? And they pointed me to this church and it was like, if you go there, you know, they'll pay for you to get home. You know, I grew up in Kent and I wasn't, it was just a blag. I thought, if I go here, I'll get money and I can, you know, it'd be more money for drugs. And I was horrified because I came here and I spoke to someone and they offered me a train pass. So I just talk about self-centered addict. Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of very dark stuff happened around here, you know, including sort of being, you know, going off with total strangers for drugs and then getting beaten up. I was raped, I was attacked, I was stabbed at a dealer's. There was a lot of really dark stuff. Yeah, so it got very dark very quickly. And I used to work on the hamburger van up the road, and it was just like, oh God, I look back, it was so sad. It was just like, you know, stand on a street corner selling hot dogs until you've got enough money to score, and then just fuck off and leave the van there and then come, oh, madness. And even with that, I only held it together for about a week, and then I was just, it was just crime for money for drugs. And the second half of my using was when I put down certain drugs. I was married, I had two kids. I was trying to lead a normal life. That was the sort of 10 years before I got into recovery. Yeah, and I don't want to get caught up in my using. Basically, when I came to NA, I went to a different fellowship first, and it was for families of people with addiction. And there was a woman there that was in this fellowship as well, and she challenged me about my using, because I used to say, you know, I used to be an addict, but I really believe that, because I, you know, I knew that I used to be an addict, but I thought, well, now I was smoking about an ounce and a half of skunk a week, drinking a lot, and taking pills, but I thought that was okay. I mean, I did think it was okay, you know. I only had one GP now, and it was in my name, so obviously this. But I, you know, the truth of it was, at the end, I was really psychotic. What I always think of at the end of my using, and it wasn't this. You know, there were far worse physical rock bottoms, and, you know, being in a squat and forging prescriptions and overdosing all over the place. That wasn't my rock bottom. My rock bottom was at the end, smoking, knowing that I was going to have a panic attack, being really psychotic, laying down. We had an air vent, and I would be laying with my ear to the air vent for the entire night, because I thought, well, I knew people were coming to kill me, and if I laid there, I'd be one step ahead of them. I don't know what that meant, but I just knew that if I laid by the air vent, it would be all right. And it, oh God, yeah, and just that fear, and the phone was unplugged, and it was just grim. And anyway, I met this girl in the other fellowship, because my husband was still using opiates at that time, so I thought, well, you know, if he stopped using opiates, then, you know, if we both stopped using, it would be okay. I remember him at one point contemplating total abstinence, and I thought, how extreme. I really, yeah. So anyway, this girl, yeah, she basically 12-stepped me, and the first meeting I went to was at Richmond, and I sat in the room. I managed to get a day clean. I somehow thought it would be quite a good idea to sort of at least not go totally off my nut. So I walked around Richmond Park all day. I managed to get to the meeting, and they were very welcoming, as we are. Everyone was really welcoming. There was a cup of tea. People were laughing and joking, like at the beginning of this meeting. And I remember looking for the difference. I thought, I couldn't make it out. I thought, they haven't suffered like I've suffered, obviously, because they wouldn't have anything. I couldn't understand, if you were a room full of addicts, how come you had clean clothes, you were laughing and joking. Couldn't work it out. And then I listened to the chair. I can't remember who did the chair, but I just remember people kept saying, come back. You know, and they're very welcoming. They spoke to me after the meeting. I remember this woman trying to come over and hug me. Oh, my God. I don't know what was worse, if it had been a bloke or a woman. It was like, what on earth? And I wanted to leave all through the meeting. You know, that level of self-obsession. I had cramp, and I wanted to uncross my legs and cross them the other way, but I thought, I'm sitting at the back, but I thought, oh, my God, if I move, they'll see me. Dying for a wee. Couldn't do that. I couldn't get up. Oh, God. Yeah. And I think of that first meeting, and I can remember a couple of the people there, and we always used to sit at the back of the meeting, and they're both dead. You know, they went back out. You know, because I hear people say about, oh, you know, so-and-so will be back. And I think, you know, this is a killer illness. And I didn't get that at first. I didn't get that this disease kills, which sounds absolutely insane as I say it. But it wasn't until people started dying in the home group, you know, people that, you know, like myself, who relapse over and over again, because I didn't do what was suggested in the beginning. You know, I checked out, I asked someone after the meeting what total abstinence meant, and he said, well, we find it best that, you know, we don't use any mood-altering substance. And I said, but you have a puff. And he said, no, we find it works best without. But what I did, the thing that I didn't do was I didn't share with anyone, but I can remember it like it was yesterday, and I thought, bit fucking extreme, bless them. But you seemed... You know, everything seemed okay. You know, apart from the God word in the steps, I did notice that. You know, people were talking about how I felt. They were talking about the same insane thinking. They were talking about the obsession and the compulsion. But this sort of, you know, we don't have a path. I thought, bless them, if that works for you, fine. But at the back of my, and this, I'm serious, you know, at the back of my head, I thought, nah. It was my reservation. And I look back and I think, I wasn't actually willing to go to any lengths. In fact, let's have it. I didn't really want to be clean. But what I wanted was to be out of the emotional pain. I wanted my head to shut up. I didn't want to be psychotic. I knew I was a mess. I knew I didn't want to go on. I didn't want to kill myself, but I didn't want to go on. And I'd forgotten what it was like to laugh. It was just like, I was just broken. But as soon as I started feeling a bit better, and it just got to be a pattern, it was like I didn't get that it was a disease. I didn't get that it was progressive. So I'd put down the drugs. All I did was I went to the two Richmond meetings. I did service. I picked up the ashtrays because that meant... Because I got a sponsor early on, and she said, do service. And I hated, after the meeting, it was like, oh, my God, talk to people. I don't think so. So I thought, well, if I pick up these ashtrays, I'm here, but I'm looking at the ground, picking up the ashtrays, and I sort of would do that and busy myself, then I'd fuck off, and then I'd tell my sponsor that, yes, I didn't run out the second the meeting was over. It made perfect sense in my head. But I didn't, you know, I didn't change anything, and I didn't work the steps. And I don't know why. I don't know why. And I've had a lot of sponsors, and I tended to pick people who either emigrated or, they either moved away or they left NA. So I'd sort of, when I did start doing the steps, because, all right, fast forward, I did about 2 years of trying to be a social, you know, have a puff now and then, it didn't work. And then I realised that the people that came around with me that had that piece were the people that were doing what was suggested and that were actively working the steps. So then I started doing, what was suggested, and funny enough, it worked. And I wish that I'd done it earlier, because I can't tell you how different my life is today. Having said that, I got about 10 years clean, and then I was prescribed some medication. I used it as prescribed. I liaised with my sponsor. I had a slip disc, and I didn't throw the remains away. Big mistake. And then at a later date, I used it, and I was off it only briefly. And I thought I'd got away with it, but then I had to come and just say this is, even though it meant going back to day one again, because I. When I confided in someone, you know, of what became apparent was if I think I've got away with it, my addict will then think we can do it again. So I needed to just come and grasp myself up. Which was a relief, quite honestly. And this year, I was 19 years this year. Which is, you know, and that's thanks to you lot and what we've got here. You know, and I used for 17 years, and I think, oh my God, I've actually been in recovery longer than I've used, which is quite amazing. You know, and in early, I feel like I'm jumping all over the place now. What I do today is what I started doing then. It's like, I've got a sponsor, bless you. And, you know, I've worked through the Green and Gold, and I sponsor, you know, some women in recovery, which is a real, real pleasure. Because I'm so grateful to, you know, everyone that's been part of my sponsorship journey. You know, my head will say that I'm a shit sponsor and I don't know what I'm doing, and I probably don't know what I'm doing, but I just think, well, all I can do is be honest and show up, and so we work the steps through the Green and Gold. I've always had a couple of service commitments. What do? I get up in the morning and I read the Just for a Day, and I eat. Never used to eat when I first came here, so I eat. I read the Just for Today, and another thing that I read, I have a little pray up. I meditate. I sit there for about 10 minutes in silence, and I say the step three prayer. And then I, you know, go off into the day. There's never a day that I don't have contact with someone in recovery. I probably, on average, go to about 3 or 4 meetings a week. I'm not knocking anyone who does more than one fellowship, but I just do NA. I just think I can get very complicated, and I just see if I was in this A, that A, and every other A, I wouldn't know if I was coming or going. So, and my experience has actually been that I've been able to sort of, I don't know, everything I've needed has been here when I've needed it. And it's like when addiction has reared its head in another area, there's been someone in my life in NA that's going through it. Yeah, it's... Mm. That's just me. I'm not knocking anyone who does. We all do what we do, don't we? So I go to about 4 meetings a week. I talk to newcomers. I do a gratitude list, and the girls that I sponsor, we send it by text, which is really cool, because then it's like my gratitude and their gratitude, and And there's, you know, and I thank God at the end of each day, because it is a miracle, you know, and I don't miss drugs. That's an even bigger miracle. Because once I sort of got my head around that this maybe could work for me as well, I really thought, it would be like through, you know, with my clenched fists and trying to sort of white knuckle, and it would be an endurance test, but it hasn't been at all. You know, there's a lot of fun in my life today. A lot's happened in recovery. I mean, I can't begin to tell you what's happened in recovery. When I first came round, I was on my own with the kids, and I had a little cleaning job. I used to drop them at school, do a little cleaning job, a sandwich round, pick them up, having done a lunchtime meeting in between, which I hated because I used to have to come into London and go to Chelsea, and I hated Chelsea meetings. Oh, God. But I used to be on the phone to my sponsor every time in this, doing this cleaning job, and I'm like, I can't do this. They should be saying, Brenda, you've only got to do it for today. You know, you're not doing it forever. I couldn't imagine myself, you know, doing the things that I've been able to do in recovery. You know, my sponsor asked me, you know, what I was interested in, what I liked, and I didn't know. I hadn't got a clue. So she suggested that I tried various little courses and tried things. Anyway, after trying many things, I went to university and I ended up qualifying in mental health. And yeah, I was in that for about 12 years. And I loved it with passion. Absolutely loved it. But if someone had said to me in early days, you know, you will be able to do this. And I learned to scuba dive probably about 10 years ago. And that is my passion. I love it. And you know, when I first came round, and when I phoned the helpline and they said there was a meeting in Richmond and it takes me about 5 minutes to get there, but my world was so small that I actually said to the chat, isn't there somewhere nearer? Because I thought, oh God, well, I've got to go as far as Richmond. Because I was so full of fear. And it was like, oh my God. It was like an endurance, you know, social interaction was like an endurance test. And yet since I've learnt to scuba dive, you know, I've sort of dived in Indonesia and the Maldives and Egypt and, oh God, it's just been absolutely brilliant. And been backpacking with my son, and yeah, these are things that I thought I didn't have any dreams. I think that was it. In early days, people would say, write down a bucket list, you know, what do you want out of recovery? And I just thought, I would just like to not be able to use, and for the washing machine head to shut up. And to, you know, if I'm lucky, just to feel at peace in myself. And quite frankly, that would have been enough. That really would have been enough. But, you know, and for ages it was enough. But then this other stuff came along as well. Yeah, there's been difficult stuff as well. You know, my sons both... I can't say with one, it's not for me to say, the other one's in the fellowship and he's 3 years clean now, but you know, they both used drugs and they went in and out of prison, and this was in their teens and their 20s and their 30s, but that was really difficult. But there were people here that, you know, that helped me through, that had been where I'd been. Yeah, it was quite weird. I remember going up on a prison visit to see one of them, and we got in there, and there was my son, and there was either side of him was the son of someone else in recovery. It was really sort of higher power stuff, so we were able to support each other. And I think probably the last few years have been the most challenging. Always before, I just said it was the stuff with the kids, but you know, my husband died. He was in the fellowship, and he died at a camp out. And then about 6 months after, I got diagnosed with cancer, and I had quite a few operations after that. But I haven't had to use. Not only have I not had to use, I haven't even wanted to use. Yeah, I remember sort of, it felt like being in early recovery again. I remember phoning you. Sorry. Phoning my sponsor and, you know, just being heard and just being encouraged to sort of, you know what you've got to do, just, you know, do what we do. And I went to a meeting every day and it felt like being in early recovery again. It felt like I didn't know how I was going to get through a day. And, yeah, I just somehow, yeah, I'm glad I'm sort of, I feel like I've sort of come to a different place now, because at the time I didn't know how I was going to get through. I mean, I knew that, I don't know if I'm making any sense. I knew that I didn't have to use, and I knew that if I did what we do, that it would, that was all I could do. But I didn't know that I'd ever have peace of mind again, but I have got peace of mind again. I mean, I miss him obviously, but he was a very large character, to put it mildly. But I can feel, you know, I can feel him here with me still. So, yeah. And in recovery, I love the campouts in recovery and the fun. You know, I'm not so keen on the conventions, but, you know, the campouts, being in a field with you lot for a week is, you know, that is my idea of, you know, where you can have proper connections. You know, just sit there around the campfire in your wellies. I don't know if there's anything else I really want to say. Just if you're new, just to... Yeah, the literature's been very, very, very important. Literature, higher power. Yeah, when I saw my higher power for a long, long time was just you lot. I just sort of, after a while, I realised that, no, Brenda, you didn't realise, my sponsor pointed it out, that here's a bunch of people and they're staying clean. You can't stay clean on your own, so they're a power greater than you. And if you carry on, you know, if you carry on turning up here and doing what they do, you know, that is a power greater than your addiction, which was really all that I needed. And for a long time, it was just you lot. You know, now I've got a strong faith in my another higher power as well, which is really good. That sounds so, I don't know what that sounded like, which is really good. I know what I mean. I know what I mean. I feel there's so much I want to say. And I'll probably go away and think, oh, fuck it, I didn't say that, and I didn't say that. Thank you. Yeah, I think what I'd say to anyone that's new is, if it doesn't make any sense, don't worry about it. Because I used to try and understand everything. It was like I'd... You know, when people first started sort of going on about the steps, I used to think, well, I can't work the steps until I know what God is and what, oh, I don't know. Yeah, I try and analyse everything. And I think the more I analyse, the worse it gets. You know, I just go round in a circle. You know, one sponsor used to say to me, don't think about it, Brenda, just do it. You know, just write the step. Don't sort of analyse every in and out of it. I guess it's sort of keeping it simple, but the connection with other people. In fact, I think connection's a huge part of it for me, is connection with myself, connection with other addicts, and connection with my higher power. You know, giving it back. You know, I get really fucked off. This is just my humble intolerance. But I think, you know, when I first went to meetings, there were women there that really reached out, that really helped. And then after a few years, it was like, where were they? And they'd gone off to this A and that A. And I think, well, if everyone else, do you know what I mean? If everyone fucked off to another fellowship, you know, got clean here and went off somewhere else, where's there going to be anyone left when someone else comes in the door? If you see what I mean. But I don't have to worry about what anyone else does. I just know that I'm not going anywhere, that, you know, I'm really, I can't put into words how grateful I am. You know, I don't really know how it works. And I don't need to know. I just need to know that, I think that's all any of us need to know, is that it's a disease, that the answer's here, and as long as we do what's suggested, you know, we get freedom from active addiction, but so much more. You know, I just feel I've got a quality of life today. You know, that I, yeah, and hope. I never had hope. You know, it's just like, oh, not another fucking day. And if I'm honest, sometimes in early recovery it felt like that as well. But, you know, even when it's been difficult, I know that, you know, feelings are like the weather. They pass. Because my head used to say, particularly in early recovery, I'd have a feeling. That's the thing I found hard all the way through recovery. The practical stuff, you know, I had to learn to do it, but it was surviving emotions that I found the hardest. And, you know, I'd get into a load of pain and my head would say, oh God, you know, it's always been like this, you feel like shit, it's always going to be like this, what's fucking changed? I give up and I can't handle it with my sort of permanent mantra. And that was always, you know, I'd always pick up. And I never understood that if I didn't pick up and I just put one foot in front of the other and stuck close to you lot, that the feelings eventually pass. You know, and I have struggled with, there have been times in recovery when I've struggled with depression. But I have to say I say depression, it's been more like very low mood. It's not been like depression how I knew it when I was using. You know, and the joy of it is that even with struggles like that, you know, there are other people here and, you know, we all help each other. Do you know what? I'm going to leave it there because I'm just, yeah. Just thank you for being here. Thank you for keeping me clean and, yeah, wish you all well in your recovery. Thank you.